Hello, everyone. Welcome to All Things Episcopal, where we talk about anything and everything related to the Episcopal Church. This podcast was designed with younger folks in mind and as a space to learn more about the Christian faith with the Episcopal lens. So in traditionally Episcopalian greeting fashion, the Lord be with you.
Hey, friends. Welcome back to All Things Episcopal. Today, we're going to talk about creation care, and there is no one better to talk about this than the Right Reverend Kathleen Bascom. Bishop Kathleen Bascom is the 10th bishop of Kansas and is the first woman to serve in the Diocese of Kansas as bishop. So continuing with all things Episcopal trend, the season finale, we are having a very Episcopate conversation. Welcome, Bishop Kathleen.
Thank you so much, Claire and friends.
I'm also selfishly excited about this because Bishop Kathleen is my bishop. So, Bishop Kathleen, if you would, tell us a little bit about your story, your discernment to the priesthood and the episcopate, and how they are similar and different. And then we'll go into the creation care part.
Right. Well, my call to the priesthood and to the episcopate share similarities in that they really were movements of the spirit that I experienced in prayer. They spring from that sense of unconditional love of the Creator and trying to discern and discover who I am and what part I have to play. There was resonance in scripture with what I was experiencing, and then communities that supported me and affirmed me and leaders that encouraged me. So that happened. There was quite a distinct time difference between when I was called. I was called to the priesthood at a really young age at the University of Kansas. So I started exploring a call to priesthood in 1982, if you can believe it. And then I didn't have my call to explore becoming a bishop until about 2018.
Wow.
So long time in between there. So, but those two, that kind of rhythm was there. The main differences, I would say, in reflecting on that, I came from a fairly secular background. We were sort of Christmas, Easter Episcopalians. My mother's faith was really devout and deep, but the rest of us, not so much. Yeah. And so that call that came not so long after a conversion experience was really earth-shaking, the call to priesthood. Yeah. And kind of like tectonic shifts. It was almost like I got on a different plate, plate, found myself in a whole new world. And I would say, though, that wasn't as much the case when I was called to the episcopate. Mm. It was still surprising. I think one of the biggest differences of the episcopacy experience was the empowerment through grace for the office is definitely, it's a job that is pretty full. And that, I think I'd tasted that earlier on, but that sense of God providing, and rather, not every minute, but in many noticeable ways to be able to do what I'm called to do. So,
yeah. Well, thank you for sharing.
Sure.
And you are also known for being a big advocate for creation care and being good environmental steward. So tell us a little bit about your inspiration for getting involved in creation care and how that plays a role in your call to the episcopate and specifically in Kansas.
Yeah. Well, I think that even though we were somewhat secular, I grew up in Denver, Colorado, and my parents were from Kansas, and my father's family still had a farm in western Kansas that was wheat and cattle mainly. And we spent a lot of time both in the Rockies and trout fishing with my other grandparents, who were very city people. Mm. They came from downtown Kansas City, and Anyway, so they were city people, but they loved the Rockies, and we loved to fish and went regularly hiking, camping, fishing, and then time on the farm. I always spent long periods there, and I believe that my spiritual life really is rooted in that sense of the divine, even when it didn't have such a Christian lens to it.
Yeah.
But I was really experienced love through the created order being outdoors.
Yeah.
And in terms of, you know, there's a lot to say about how it's become interwoven with church and church leadership. Mm-hmm. And maybe I think you might have other questions down the line about that. So maybe I'll save about that a little bit, what we're doing and, you know, what it means as a bishop and how. Yeah.
Awesome. So we have a young adult on the episode today, Riley Demo, and she's going to ask some questions as well.
Yeah, I just had, I love your sentiment about, you know, love for the natural world and growing up in that space. Could you kind of tell us, like, what role do you think joy plays in our practice of creation here?
Well, I think that when I talked about that experience of the divine, you know, in those early creation stories in Genesis, you have this sense of God delighting in all that God makes, God seeing the goodness. And I believe that in the Imago Dei, our being in the image of God, that we really feel that and tap that when we're engaging the created order. St. Augustine said that we're not even fully human unless we're engaged with the natural order. And I experienced that personally. And I think it does motivate a lot of people. Mm. And I don't know if I haven't thought about it in terms of sheer up joy so much. But I think the sense of beauty, which is very connected to joy, motivates me.
I agree. I think that there's a sense of wonder and awe that we can get from creation, which leads to a sense of joy. Like, how can we not feel a sense of joy when we see such beauty? Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, I think, like, when I was kind of thinking about this, I was in the space of Easter, and I feel like all of those things kind of coincide during Easter. So kind of going further, what are ways in which you yourself, I know you talked about kind of on the farm, but can you talk about how you yourself are centered to the earth, or something that specifically kind of connects you to nature?
Sure. For me, the act of prairie restoration, whether that's in larger scale or even urban places. I came to love Tallgrass Prairie when I was the chaplain at Kansas State University, and we were kind of replanting a ministry there. And my husband his family was from the Manhattan area. So we lived for 3.5 years just west of Manhattan. And that's where I came to learn about the Tallgrass Prairie, because even though I'd experienced these other things in Colorado and western Kansas, I didn't really know anything about Tallgrass Prairie. And I just fell in love with the biodiversity, with these subtle but magnificent plant species in their different seasons, wading through the grasses that were above our heads, learning what's going on underneath the earth, how, you know, it might be a plant might be 6 foot tall, but underneath it's three times deeper, and all that's going on. So that is has been my central expression. And when I learned in Iowa during the 2008 floods that one reason all that flooding was happening in Iowa and the cities is that they're down to only 1/1000th of the Tallgrass Prairie there. They've removed like almost everything. And that they would get so much rainfall and now you've got corn, and soybeans, that the deep-rooted systems that used to absorb all that and cleanse it is just washing, you know, washing into the rivers. And a lot of the flooding that affected people of least economic means would be helped by restoring tall grass prairie. So that was a moment when my call to social justice and call to biodiversity and restoration efforts really came together, because I could see the great good. And that's just that was just a tip of the iceberg for me, and seeing what can happen from restoration. So I hope, that's one strand I hold on to, Riley.
No, I fully agree. I feel like the vast expanse of a prairie is something that people don't often get to experience. And it draws you deep into nature in a very interesting and intimate way. So I appreciate that sentiment.
Just to say, there's the vastness of it. And even in downtown Topeka, we returned 1 acre to teaching prairie, and the high school students of Topeka High School, it's like we have 3 acres of public green space, but a third is teaching prairie, and they just hang out there, eat their lunch there, and little kids come and release monarch butterflies there. So, and I, every Thursday, we have volunteers working there, both the prairie and the food gardens. So just to say, there's the vastness and the systemic things that can happen, but there's also microcosm prairies important too.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely like balancing scale, the vastness versus the intimacy. It's very cool. Could you talk a little bit more about the difference between creation care and environmental justice, or if you see a difference at all?
Yes. I think I gave you the moment that was kind of a window, a defining time for me. For me, I use creation care in a broad sense. It's kind of the umbrella term that I use for how we as humans enter the ecological whole, right, of God's everything. So I think creation care is a pretty great term, and that's the Episcopal Church has been kicking that around, I think, in this time of Presiding Bishop Michael Curry. You know, it's one of his foundations. But environmental justice is how we work toward making sure that racism isn't causing people to suffer in ways that other people aren't suffering. And it's definitely happened. It happens, it's happening, and to keep working against that. So making sure that Indigenous people are at the table, that people of color, that their neighborhoods are getting priority, you know, looking at where do we put our waste? What's being polluted? So it's a part of creation care, and of human care and of pastoral care, it's kind of a subset of the work under the umbrella of creation care.
That kind of leads me to my next question, which is, can you tell us a little bit about your time on the Episcopal Church's task force working with creation care and environmental racism, and what that mission kind of means, what it means to you, and what it means as a whole?
Well, maybe what it means, I think something that's really important right now is that we're looking for whole society answers to climate crisis. And I think that it's a wonderful time for people of faith, because we are invited in a global society, global reality that knows we need all hands on deck. People understand that the people of faith have something to bring to this. Mm-hmm. And a few things, various things we have to bring. For one, we're inspired because it's all, you know, our motivation is it's of God. And it, you know, we do this because the endeavor, the creation itself to us is holy. And so we're called to it. I mean, we really don't have a choice, you know, right there from the beginning, from those from Genesis passages or from the wisdom of Jesus, you know, we have to be all in. And so people get that. They also know that we have networks of people who are both that are often in the private sector. People in our pews, you know, may have various relationship to government or politics or science, but they know us and we know them. And so I think we have an important role to play. So that's one thing. And I think it's a Kairos moment, you know, when things come together, when God is moving and we're called into that. In terms of, I was thinking about this driving over, that the structures of the Episcopal Church, I thought I might just give a little narrative that gives a picture of how the Episcopal Church is engaged. So one of my first general conventions, I just went and participated and spoke up a little bit on a hearing, right? So these legislative committees, and that early on was Creation Care. And in those days, it might have even been called environmental stewardship, I think. This is probably about 15 years ago, I would think, maybe 20 even. And I spoke about my sense that we needed to work regionally, not provincially, and that I also thought we needed, you know, someone in the presiding bishop's office. Anyway, so I did a hearing. And then before too long, I was invited on to that legislative committee. So, you know, so I was on the other side of the desk hearing, and I remember things like, we're still working on it, divesting from fossil fuel investments, right? Mm-hmm. And that was astonishing to see people from like British Petroleum, BP, and all these lobbyists coming and listening to them. And we did it halfway, right? And then there's the interim body, which is the task force for Creation Care. And I've served on it 2 to 3 times. The last two have been as bishop and once as new bishop and once during COVID. And sometimes it is hard to be as present, all of us, but I have been able to see the work, you know, that we have been getting stronger in this work. We have more people engaged. We're giving more money for grants. And now we're starting to build some really big networks and participating in the Council of Parties, the UN COP. We have a presiding bishop's delegation. So I was there virtually in Glasgow. We were only virtual. And then in Dubai this last December, we were there. I was there in person. And at least the faith perspective is there. I see it more, that level, more as learning of what's going on and taking it back to, again, to get people to act and to advocate through our connections, through our work. But it's kind of a cycle. Then we can sometimes influence policy as well. So there's all those levels. And now I find myself chair of the legislative body this summer for Creation Care, along with a really wonderful woman named Nuria Parrish. People might know her. She's a canon in Western Michigan, and she's been working on these same. We are both big advocates of nature-based solutions. So we've both worked on it more from the ground up, where other people have been working on energy and atmospheric things. Anybody could kind of have this story. That's one thing I want to say to everybody out there. If you're engaged with the Episcopal Church or even just want to go to a hearing and you're not, but you're interested in a certain topic, we have a space. Mm-hmm. And I bet there are people who don't feel like they have a space and we should use it.
Yeah. It sounds like it's just, it all comes down to relationships, both with the environment, but also with each other, because you were talking about building things from the ground up. And when we build things from the ground up, it all has to do with who are your partners, who is your neighbor, and how are we engaging them in a meaningful and intentional way. That's what it sounds like, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. So as you know, this podcast is designed with young people in mind. And a lot of young people are challenged by what's happening with the environment and climate change. And it's not just making them concerned, but quite frankly, anxious.
Yeah.
About what's going on. In what ways are you encouraging creation care specifically in the Diocese of Kansas in meaningful ways that young people can participate in a very tangible way? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think, such a central scripture for me is when Jesus says, do not be anxious, consider the lilies of the field, consider the birds of the air. And I love that consider word has two meanings in the English, at least. I've got to really study the Greek more. So this consider is both look at and see it and study it. And that kind of gets into Riley's question about joy, I think. Is in our time of anxiety, don't miss it. And then also consider it is to be considerate, to take care of it. In Kansas, we have Bethany House and Garden. I was starting to talk about it some. That's where the Episcopal Church has had land since 1860. And we have both a small conference center and a house there that used to be the bishop's offices. So when we transformed our acreage into this public green space, kind of returning it to the city of Topeka and creating it as a hub for creation care work, both in Kansas and in our whole grasslands region, we really hope that it can inspire. So we have 18 other sites across the eastern part of Kansas that we call creation care sites. Some are on church properties. Some are just land or spaces or enterprises that Episcopalians or friends are doing. And they see Bethany House and Garden as a hub. We have a curate for creation care who will probably become our creation care missioner, so paid person from the diocese. We are now into our fourth intern. They can live there at Bethany House and Garden. We have housing for two interns, and we've had people both summertime internships and more year-round. One of them is dedicated to justice work. So the St. Simon's intern has that environmental justice or racial justice aspect to it. And then the other tends toward more biodiversity intern, though often they're somewhat customized to the gifts of whom God brings, who wants to do this work with us. Now we are building these creation trustee network. So not only these sites that are kind of our sites, who else do we know about? And just about 2 months ago, we finalized working with 10 other dioceses. So Kansas, Nebraska, all the way to Montana and Idaho, we have 10 dioceses who are starting to build these networks of creation trustees in each diocese, and then we're linking ourselves together so that we can have much greater impact. And we would love to see young adults be leaders in these creation trustees networks. So I want to put the opening out there. These are stipended internships, so free housing and about $1,000 a month. And an application and interview process, but it's not real onerous. So we love anybody who's interested to look into that with us and to be a creation trustee. Like, I know a bit of Riley's studies and her work, and you would be a great one. I just recently happened to visit three cattle ranches after the Palm Sunday service. Did wear me out a little bit. But I was surprised by there were two young high school women, and one, she definitely is a Creation trustee. She's going to come to our annual event, which everyone is invited to, which is July 20th, where we will gather there in Topeka for a whole day event. There's housing that we can get you. And we'll be doing some Zooming with those other dioceses. So we'll like give a shout out to Montana, and people who are doing regenerative ag can talk to one another across these states. But this young woman, Candace, who was right there when I saw a calf who was just 1 year, I mean, 1 hour old, she is going to be one of our speakers, right? She's going to talk about young women and agriculture. It's what she wants to do with her life. So she'll be there. We could, maybe you can post, do you post things?
Yeah.
So maybe hopefully we can post these events and these internship opportunities.
Yeah, we'll link them in the show notes. So they'll be there for all of time. So people can continue to learn about this opportunity and the many opportunities that follow as well.
Please.
So I know Father Colin has a couple of questions that he'll be asking as well from, yeah.
Well, I just, that sounds like a really exciting event for everybody to go to. I'm curious how, because I looked up the Bethany House and Garden a little bit, what has the impact been for the Diocese of Kansas to have that ministry made available to the public?
I think that one thing I'm very intrigued in, and I think we're already seeing the fruit of it, is creation evangelism. You know, that these are threshold places. And I think that we're connecting with more younger people. So the four interns, I was trying to think about it. You know, yeah, two have come through our Canterbury houses as well on into this work. So from our college campuses. And then others like our groundskeeper and his wife, who are very engaged. She teaches at Topeka High School. They're in their 30s. They're going to be going to Kenya this summer with our Kansas to Kenya. But they're not particularly churched people right now, in my understanding. But we have good conversations. So I think we're connecting with people who have similar values and gifts. And it opens us to having conversations about our experience of God, our experiences of call to change. So that's one thing we're seeing. It's still fairly toddler stage. I think it also, interestingly, it connects us when I go visit a church and then do like the reception and confirmation, but then go on these site visits. I think that there are people who have done this work, agrarian work or wildlife, or who haven't always been seen fully. You know, they're leaders. And interestingly, a lot of times priests won't even know, or clergy don't even know these people are in their parishes. I'll say, I'd like to meet with them. Oh, I don't know if we have anybody like that. Always. Every church in Kansas does. That sometimes I think by nature they're quieter people and they get seen fully. And what they're doing is so important. And people are finally waking up to, you know, to what they, you know, the value of what they do. So that's one impact. At last, I think slightly funny. I was aware that in Iowa, I started this work of like the church lands, and suddenly some of the tiny parishes have like really beautiful acreage on, say, trying to remember which lake in Iowa, but it's really important what they were doing, and they'd seen themselves as the poor, you know, as the last, and Jesus is the last shall be first. You know, I think that's really interesting as well, is that some, it's not always the number of people or the amount of money in the bank. Some of our places and people, there's a new richness to be seen and what they have to offer and what they're doing.
Yeah, that makes me think of a parish in particular here in West Missouri, up in near Fairfax and Skidmore, called St. Oswald's in the Fields. And it's a very small parish, but has been there for over 100 years. And they have an annual harvest festival. And it's a beautiful liturgy that they share together as a community. And it's totally centered around agriculture and creation care and the like, and our gifts from God.
Which part of the state again? Where are they? And I love St. Oswald's in the Field.
Yeah, that would be up in northwest Missouri, about an hour north of St. Joseph.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, what other ministries are you hoping to see come and bear fruit in the Episcopal Church? Maybe not necessarily just in the Diocese of Kansas, but throughout the Episcopal Church, and maybe not even within the United States context of the Episcopal Church. But is there a ministry that's up and coming or that you would hope to see bear some fruit in the future?
And are you talking still in the creation care world?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Well, so exciting is what the Archbishop of Canterbury launched at Lambeth, which is the Anglican Communion Forest. Mm-hmm. Hoping you guys have heard of that. And we are kind of one of those central U.S. and one of the main grasslands expressions of it. But we meet online. So people that are restoring mangroves, people that are working on peat bogs, lots of reforestation. Like in Africa, they are many places are way ahead of us. If you look at Kenya, leaders in Kenya and young adults, there's a man named Nicholas Pandey, who was one of the Anglican Communion's leaders at COP28. And he's on staff with Anglican Communion Forest. He is one of the most articulate spokespersons for the environmental movement that I can even imagine. And he links his faith with it. And so they're building this global network of the kind of things we're trying to do just in this Kansas to Montana, which is a large region. Some of them are smaller. But we just need to stay, I think, connected with them. And they've connected us with a platform called Restore that anybody can go on, where you will go on and it's kind of like Google Maps. And say you took Bethany House and Garden, which is small, but we would draw a little polygon around that parcel, right? And it would read how much carbon's being sequestered currently underground. It will tell us what kind of plant and animal species they expect, what the influence on water, right? If we take the rancher in West, not our diocese, but Western Kansas, who has about 15,000 acres, who's a potato farmer, who's starting to put in a lot more prairie and do regenerative ag, we take his acreage, right, and link it, and we can start to have a baseline to see if where God's leading at, what God's leading us to do is having an impact. That all came through the Anglican Communion Forest. That's a gift. Because we were starting to build these networks and wondered, oh, do we talk to people at K-State or University of Nebraska? How in the world are we ever going to know what we're doing is any good? And they got us for free to the people who can help us do that work. So that connection with the science community is so crucial. I'm sure Riley might have other ideas about that. So finding those allies that way. And I'm trying to think other ministry-wise, but does that answer a little bit, Colin, Father Colin?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just picking your brain as a bishop out there, moving and grooving throughout the world as a bishop, just what you might be thinking and seeing happening or not happening out there, and just maybe some ideas that had ever popped into your brain. So that's all. But yeah, thank you for sharing.
Yeah. I know that there's an important question that Riley had about the place of emphasis on young people in creation care. Riley, do you want to go ahead and ask it?
Yeah, so a lot of emphasis is placed on young people in creation care, but they're kind of the ones receiving all of the consequences of our collective past. So there's, you know, a good reason that there's emphasis placed on young people. But from what I've seen, there is also a lot of grief around kind of passing that on for older folks. So what do you think are some beneficial ways for kind of older parishioners, older folks in our community to work through that grief and understanding the care for creation?
Well, I think it's really interesting to me that a lot of people, I think, that are kind of old hippies, I'm just being out there here, are engaged. We had a wonderful first screening of a PBS film called Hot Times in the Heartland, in which we get pretty good airtime, both the Episcopal Church and what we're doing at Bethany House and Garden. But it's a wonderful montage of all these different endeavors, whether it's, you know, Nobel Peace Prize scientists from K-State or people who are doing the waterworks in Lawrence. And it showed people of lots of ages. Wes Jackson, who runs the Land Institute, you know, best friend of Wendell Berry. They're like the eldest statesmen, right? So I think generationally, there is a place for everybody. And I think that the church grounds, again, if we think that both small, if you see our church grounds as places of healing, both the earth and the people, and they're accessible, and a lot of people of varied ages can come, both the scale, you know, but to really garden. Our gardeners tend to be like newly retired, and we're still just a handful. So I definitely want to put this call out. If there's anybody who can garden on Thursdays in Topeka, please come. We'll have ways to reach out to you. And we may start Tuesday afternoon evenings as well. But it tends to be people who are like 60 to 70 and people who are 20 to 35. Interestingly, those are kind of our main people doing stuff. So we need to get more age groups out and find tasks and reach constituencies who maybe aren't as ideologically wired that way. I think it's interesting that anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I think that, of course, I'm focusing on nature-based solutions. There's so many other things like you know, farm to table that different age groups could be very, you know, who are the best cooks in our parishes and what can they teach us just about recipe, like that recipes? And what about the farmer's market? I think that and food distribution, that's and kitchen gardens, you know, some of those older women or anyway, I think that also could be a very fruitful and recycling. There's so many entry points.
As you were talking about different ways to engage, I'm thinking back to like the parish that I grew up in, and the dean of the cathedral there started a fast during Lent of no plastic. Yeah, and it's great. Just kind of continued on and kind of become, as I understand it, since I've no longer been a part of that parish, part of the culture. Where you do
every Lent. Wow.
And
beautiful.
I think it's even continued past that now, beyond Lent. It's just part of the culture at the cathedral, at St. John's Cathedral. So yeah, I think that one little thing that we can do, do our little bit of good and pass it on to the next generation is worthwhile. Worthwhile.
I know in Iowa, they had the 1,000 green grannies and they had bounded together. And one of their main things they did was just to put a little thing that had some spiritual message, I can't remember, on to hang on their rearview mirror, about to make sure they took in their
reusable grocery
bag. Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yes, because, and I know that that for me was a discipline only about a year and a half ago to say, yeah, I am never not going back to the car for my bags. If they're not in the car, then I'm carrying them in my hands.
Yeah.
But little things.
I need to be better about that myself.
Little things.
So speaking of little things, agency is a large part of how we move forward in life. And thinking about how my young people get involved in Lawrence or Manhattan here in Kansas City, and be able to approach their rector or campus minister about addressing creation care. Do you have kind of some words of wisdom on how to start that conversation? If a young person is like, I really want to be a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, there's always the, do you start at a larger level and then connect? We have, so Sean Sheridan is bivocational priest at St. John's in Abilene, and he has three children, and Addie is probably now about 8 or 9. She's the youngest member of our task force on creation care here in the diocese.
Oh, wow.
And so she like helped to motivate the blessing of Milford Lake, which is pretty compromised. She is very articulate. So there's like that, but not everybody's going to tie in on that level. Mm-hmm. We are devoted to making sure we have more youth and young adult in leadership positions, not just promote, you know, what they're, you know, kind of the youth council or the the things for them to get out of the side. We want to keep youth ministry strong and youth, young adult and campus strong, but we also want to break the silos. And we're the Council of Trustees and myself and our staff, we're trying to keep, every time we're like repopulating committees or work to say, who's young, who knows, who has gifts, who has passion around this. I think we could encourage all, you know, I think that hopefully young people should just be able to go to their leaders, whether they're closer to like the senior warden or the priest or the deacon, and share ideas. I would empower them to do that. And if they have something in this world of creation care and they somehow get rebuffed, they should email the diocesan office. Let me have a conversation with the clergy if there was something that somehow a young person got smushed in their attempts.
Yeah. I love that you're talking about intergenerational ministry and creating space for young people to not only have voice, but also, for lack of a better word, vote on what happens within their faith-based community. I think that's so vital, especially as we start talking about the vitality of congregations and parish life. If we aren't having youth be fully engaged to the highest level possible with some mentorship and coaching, then what does this next wave or generation of churchgoers look like? So I love that idea.
And that leads me to thinking about, in terms of vitality, I think the importance within our own historical background of the idea that a parish is geographic, that a diocese is geographic, that we got into for a while, like church, like shopping mall, right? But that the people in any given congregation are to care for, pray for everything in this geographic area around them. And I think both getting young people to the table and also collaborative regional ministry, I really believe in, because I think that parishes coming together, working together, creating two. So we have our Minster models, which is where every parish in the diocese is part of a Minster. Mm-hmm. But that's like, you know, two or three parishes looking at what's right there in their region. And I think that both helps congregational vitality and can be a great kind of structure for working on environmental issues.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've talked about the joy, the grief, the challenges of creation care and addressing environmental challenges. We are a hopeful people as Christians, sometimes stubbornly hopeful. So we always like to close our podcast episodes on a note of hope or inspiration. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if you can share with us, what is the most inspiring thing that you have come across in the Diocese of Kansas when addressing creation care?
Well, I do think just that a vision for that acreage, you know, at the heart of our diocese to be transformed mm-hmm. for greater public good and to be a center for creation care, that that it seemed God moved in God's people so quickly that, like, mm-hmm. you know, quite a bit of money, about $600,000 was raised quickly, that people saw the vision, that incredible architect came into being, that, you know, we managed to find a groundskeeper, that the internships are happening, and then that helping to kind of be an inspiration for this larger network, you know, going to Montana and connecting globally. It just has been wonderful to behold it, because often in ministry we'll have times when you have a great idea, and it is a great idea often, and it just keeps, it's like hitting your head against a wall, you know, and it doesn't, and it's not like God can't be in that as well. But in my experience of, you know, like 42 years since I first started as a student minister at KU, I've seen times when human inspiration and assets seem like the Spirit is blessing it. And it's for way beyond those people of that time. Mm. But it, you know, it does give you pause and awe mm-hmm. to see God work with us and to feel like you're in line or mm-hmm. aligning.
Yeah.
With something that God sees.
Well, thank you so much, Bishop Kathleen. We would love it if you would close us out in prayer, if you wouldn't mind. Kind of our tradition with bishops being on podcast, that they close us out in prayer.
Wonderful. Thanks again for what you're doing and how it's touching people and inspiring us. So thank you for this podcast. Thank you for being on with me. It's been a real privilege and very heartening. And I'm going to share a prayer from a book that I esteem called God's Good Earth, Praise and Prayers for Creation by Anne and Jeffrey Rawthorne. Okay. If you don't have it, get God's Good Earth from the Rawthorns. And I think it's a beautiful collection. So the Lord be with you.
And also with you.
Oh God, your voice can split the heavens, part the waters, divide night from day. It can flash forth fire, shake the wilderness, thunder over the storm. Yet your word, so often heard among us, is not in the tempest, but in the quiet, in the silence. Speak to us, O God, and let us listen, that we might detect the whisper of a wing, the rustle of a feather. Listen to us, that we might glimpse the dove and hear the voice that Jesus heard, saying, "You are my beloved, with you I am well pleased." Speak to us again, O Lord, for when you speak, it is done, and behold, it is very good. Amen.
Amen. All right, friends. Well, thank you so much for being with us, and we will see you for season 3, hopefully on All Things Episcopal. Thanks.
Hey, friends. Thanks for listening. Please like and subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about All Things Episcopal, visit campusministry.diowestmo.org/All Things Episcopal. All Things Episcopal podcast is a production of the Diocese of West Missouri in association with Resonant Media. The Lord be with you all.